their yelling voices fade away. And after both helicopters just crashed in a heaping mess, who's to say they're even following? After 20 minutes of a full-on sprint, we stop in a small valley. Sweat runs down my face. I shrug Sam off, and he drops the bags. Bernie Kosar lands.
Well, I imagine we're going to be all over the news again after that, Sam says.
I nod. Staying hidden is going to be a lot harder than I thought. I bend over at the waist, catching my breath with my hands on my knees. I smile, which quickly changes to a kind of incredulous half-laugh over what just happened. Six grins crookedly, adjusts the chest in her arms, and begins climbing the next hill.
Come on, guys, she says. We're far from out of the woods just yet.
Chapter 8. We hop a freight train in Tennessee, and once we are settled, Six tells us about her and Katerina being captured while they were in upstate New York, just a month after narrowly escaping the Mogadorians in West Texas. This second time around, after botching the first attempt, the Mogadorians had planned well, and when they stormed the room, they totaled more than 30 in number. Six and Katerina had been able to take a few down, but they were quickly bound, gagged, and drugged. When Six woke up, having no idea how much time had passed, she was alone in a cell in a hollowed-out mountain. She didn't discover she was in West Virginia until some time later. Six learned the Mogadorians had been trailing them the entire time, observing, hoping the two might lead them to the others, because, in Six's words,
"Why kill one when the others might be near?"
I shift uneasily when she says this. Maybe she is still being followed, and they are waiting for the perfect time to kill us.
They had bugged our car when we were eating in the diner in Texas, and it never once occurred to either of us to check, she says, and then gives herself over to a long silence.
Aside from an iron door containing a sliding hatch in its center for food to be delivered through, her tiny cell was made entirely of rock, measuring 8 feet on each side. She had no bed or toilet, and the cell was pitch black. The first 2 days passed in total darkness and silence, without food or water, though she never felt hungry or thirsty, which, she said she later learned, was due to the charm's effect. And she had started to believe she'd been forgotten. But her luck hadn't been that good. And on the third day, they came for her.
When they opened the door, I was huddled in the far corner. They threw a bucket of cold water on me, picked me up, blindfolded me, and pulled me away.
After being dragged down a tunnel, they let her walk on her own while surrounded by 10 or so Moogs. She could see nothing, but heard plenty. Screams and cries from other prisoners, there for who knows what reasons. When he heard this, Sam perked up and seemed about to interrupt and ask questions, but said nothing. The roars of beasts locked away in their own cells and metallic clanking. And then she had been thrust in a room, had her wrists chained to a wall, and been gagged. They'd ripped off her blindfold, and when her eyes finally adjusted, she saw Katerina on the opposite wall, also chained and gagged, and looking far worse than Six felt.
And then he finally entered, a Mogadorian who looked no different from someone you're likely to pass on the street. He was small, had hairy arms, and a thick mustache. Almost all of them had mustaches, as though they had learned to blend in by watching movies from the early 80s. He wore a white shirt, and the top button was undone, and for some reason my eyes focused on the thick tuft of black hair poking out. I looked into his dark eyes, and he smiled at me in a way that told me he was looking forward to doing what he was about to do. and I started to cry.
I slid down the wall until I dangled from the shackles around my wrists, watching through my tears as he pulled razor blades, knives, pliers, and a drill from the desk they had in the center of the room. When the Mogadorian had finished removing over 20 instruments, he'd gone to 6 and stood inches from her face so that she could smell his sour breath.
"Do you see all of these?"
he'd asked. She didn't respond.
"I intend to use each and every one of them on you and your Sepan, unless you truthfully answer every question I ask. If you don't, I assure you that both of you will wish you were dead."
He picked one up, a thin razor blade with a rubber-coated handle, and caressed the side of 6's face with it.
"I've been hunting you kids for a very long time," he'd said. "We've killed 2 of you, and now we have one right here. Whatever number you are, as you might imagine, I hope you are number 3.
6 had made no response, pushing herself against the wall as though she might disappear into it. The Mogadorian grinned, the flat end of the razor still touching her face. Then he twisted it, so the blade pressed against her cheek, and while looking deep into her eyes, he jerked the razor down and made a long, thin gash along her face. Or rather, he tried to, but it had been his own face that was slit open. Blood instantly poured down his cheek, and he screamed in pain and anger, kicking the desk over, sending all of his tools flying, and he stormed from the room. 6 and Katerina had been dragged back to their cells, kept in darkness another 2 days before finding themselves again gagged and chained to the walls of the room. Sitting on the desk with his cheek bandaged, sat the same Moog, looking far less certain of himself than he had before. He jumped from the desk and removed 6's gag, grabbed the same razor he had tried cutting her with, and held it up in front of her face, twisting it so that the light glimmered along the blade.
"I don't know what number you are."
For a second, she'd thought he would try to cut her again, but he turned and crossed the room to Katerina instead. He stood at her side while looking at 6, and then he touched the blade to Katerina's arm.
"But you're going to tell me right now."
"No!"
6 had screamed, and then very slowly, the Mogadorian made an incision down Katerina's arm just to be certain he could. His grin widened, and beside the original cut he made another. This one, deeper than the first. Katerina groaned in pain while the blood ran down her arm.
"I can do this all day. Do you understand me? You're going to tell me everything I want to know, starting with, what number are you?"
6 had closed her eyes. When she reopened them, he was at the desk, turning over a dagger that changed colors with movement. He'd held it up, wanting 6 to see the blade twist and glow as it came to life. 6 could feel its hunger, its desperation for blood.
"Now, your number. 4, 7. Are you lucky enough to be number 9?
Katerina had shaken her head in an attempt to keep 6 quiet, and 6 knew that no amount of torture would ever cause her Sepan to talk. But she also knew she preferred death to seeing Katerina maimed and mutilated. The Mogadorian had gone to Katerina, lifted the dagger so the tip was just over her heart. It jerked in his hand,
as though the heart was a magnet pulling it forward. He looked into Six's eyes.
I have all the time in the galaxies for this,
he'd said without emotion.
While you are in here with me, we are out there with the rest of you. Don't think anything has stopped us from moving forward because we have you. We know more than you think, but we want to know everything. If you don't want to see her sliced into little pieces, then you better start talking, and fast. And every single word that comes out better be true. I will know if you're lying.
Six had told him everything she remembered about leaving Lorien and the trip here. The chests, where they'd been hiding. She talked so fast that most of it came out jumbled. Six told him she was number 8, not wanting to tell him the whole truth, and there was something about the desperation in her voice that caused him to believe it.
You really are weak, aren't you? Your relatives on Lorien, as easy as they fell, at least they were fighters. At least they had some bravery and dignity. But you,
he'd said, and shook his head as if disappointed.
You have nothing, number 8.
And then he jammed the knife forward through Katarina's heart. All Six could do was scream. Their eyes had met for a single second before Katarina drifted away, her mouth still gagged, slowly sliding down the wall until the chain had run out of slack and she hung limply by her wrists as the light drained from her eyes.
They were going to kill her anyway, Six says softly. Telling them what I did, at least I spared her from horrible torture, as if there's any comfort in that.
Six wraps her arms around her knees and stares at some abstract point out the window of the train. Of course there's comfort in that, I offer, wishing I were brave enough to stand and wrap my arms around her. To my surprise, Sam is that brave. He stands and makes his way over to her. He doesn't say a word when he sits down next to her, instead opening his arms. Six buries her face in Sam's shoulder and cries. She eventually pulls back and wipes her cheeks.
When Katarina was dead, they tried everything, and I mean everything they could to kill me. Electrocution? Drowning? Explosives? They injected me with cyanide, which did nothing. I didn't even feel the needle going into my arm. They threw me in a chamber filled with poisonous gas, and it was like the air inside was the freshest I'd ever breathed. The Mogadorian who pushed the button on the other side of the door, though, he was dead within seconds.
Six takes another swipe at her cheek with the back of her hand.
It's funny, you know, that I think I killed more Mogadorians when I was captured than I did at the school in Ohio. They finally threw me in another cell, and I think they'd planned on keeping me there until they killed 3 through 7.
I love that you told them you were number 8, Sam says.
I feel bad that I did it now. It's like I tarnished Katarina's legacy, or the real number 8s.
Sam places his hands on both her shoulders.
No way, Six.
How long were you in there? I ask.
185 days, I think.
My mouth drops open. Over half a year locked away, completely and utterly alone, waiting to be killed. I'm so sorry, Six.
I was just waiting and praying for my legacies to finally develop so I could get the hell out of there. And then one day, the first one finally did. It was after breakfast. I looked down and my left hand just wasn't there.
Of course I freaked out, but then I realized I could still feel my hand. I tried to pick up my spoon, and sure enough, I could. And that's when I understood what was happening. And invisibility was the thing I needed in order to escape.
How it started for Six wasn't all that different from how it had started for me, when my hand began to glow in the middle of my first class at Paradise High. 2 days later, Six had been able to make herself completely invisible. And when dinner rolled around that day, and the slot on the door was slid open, and her meal pushed through, the Mogadorian guard saw an empty cell. He'd looked wildly around and then hit an alarm that sent a piercing wail through the cave. The iron door had been flung open, and 4 Mogs charged in. While they stood there, dumbfounded as to how she'd escaped, she slid by and rushed out the door and down the tunnel, seeing the cave for the very first time. It had been a massive, labyrinthine network of long, interconnected tunnels that were dark and drafty. There were cameras everywhere. She'd passed thick glass windows revealing chambers that looked like scientific labs, clean and brightly lit. The Mogadorians inside had worn white plastic suits and goggles, but she'd raced by so swiftly she couldn't tell what they were doing. A sprawling room housed 1,000 or so computer screens, with a Mogadorian sitting in front of each, and Six assumed they were looking for signs of us. Just like Henri, I thought. One tunnel was lined with heavy steel doors she had been sure held other prisoners. But she sped on, knowing her legacy was far from developed, and terrified she wouldn't stay invisible for very long. The siren had continued to wail, and then she reached the heart of the mountain, a great, cavernous hall 1/2 mile wide, and so dark and murky she could hardly see to its other side. The air had been stifling, and Six was already sweating. The walls and ceiling were lined with huge wooden trellises to keep the cave from collapsing, and narrow ledges chiseled into the rock face connected the tunnels dotting the dark walls. Above her, several long arches had been carved from the mountain itself to bridge the great divide from one side to the other. She had pressed herself against a rocky crag, her eyes darting back and forth for a way out. The number of passageways had been endless. She'd stood there, overwhelmed, her eyes sweeping across the hollow darkness, seeing nothing at all that looked promising. But then she did. Far across the ravine, a pale pinprick of natural light at the end of a wider tunnel. Just before she climbed the wooden trellis to reach the stone bridge that led to it, something else caught her eye. The Mogadorian who had killed Katerina. She couldn't let him get away. She followed him. He entered the room where he had killed Katerina.
I went straight to his desk and took the sharpest razor I saw, then grabbed him from behind and slit his throat. And as I watched the blood gush and spread across the floor, followed by him bursting into ash, I found myself wishing that it would have been possible to kill him a little more slowly. Or to kill him again.
What did you do when you finally got out? I asked.
I hiked up the opposite mountain, and when I got up there, I stared down at the cave for an hour, trying to remember every little detail I could. Once I was satisfied with that, I took note of everything I passed on the 5-mile run to the nearest road. And from there, I jumped on the back of a slow pickup truck. When it stopped a few miles down the road to get gas, I stole his map, a notepad, and a couple of pens from the cab. Oh, and a bag of potato chips.
Nice! What kind of chips? Sam asks.
Dude! I say.
What?
They were barbecue, Sam. I marked the cave's location on the map I showed you guys back at the motel. And in the notepad, I drew a diagram of everything I remembered, like a chart that would lead whoever read it straight to its entrance. I kind of panicked and hid the diagram not far from the town,